time to go viral. I'm a homicidal, I'm killing all my rivals. I'm the man, shit, I put that on the Bible. I Spotify my target, cause you know I got the title. Hey, I'm a Mac too. I told baby shake that ass like she Apple. She said it's real, so she got my name tattooed. House full, so I hit it in the back room. Baby said she need it now, peep the urgency. I want a little Kim before she had the surgery. Legs spread on that hardcore poster. She love twerking, she just do it for the coach. Big dog, bull master. Six tray Chevrolet, I'm classic. All these niggas mad at me, that's tragic. The main bitch in the bed, that's graphic. Yeah, we about to go viral.
We about to go. What's the deal, people? It's your boy, the one and only, your host that do the most, Mr. Viral himself, aka the villain, because they hate me for my opinion. Welcome back to another episode of the Viral Way Podcast. Make sure you share, like, subscribe to the channel. As always, I got the crew in the building. We got Messiah the Great, he here to lead the way. We got Cali the one, not the two, Mr. Lightskin himself. And we got a very special guest in the house tonight, West Coast legend, hip hop legend. He done been involved with every heavy hitter in the game. We got Mr. Paul Stewart, DJ Paul Stewart himself, white boy from Crenshaw. How you doing, my man? Welcome to the Viral Way.
Oh, man, I'm blessed. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. Excited to be here.
This is actually a blessing. I ran back a lot of your interviews, and I just put two and two together because I'd have heard your name for sure before, but to put two and two together, this is actually a blessing. And for the people out there who's not familiar, we're going to run a little clip for y'all so y'all can get the basis of who we're dealing with.
I just hooked up with Def Jam. I go with a DJ named Paul Stewart back in Los Angeles. He heard my stuff. I was singing, but I was singing over a lot of hip-hop tracks. So rather than take me to like an R&B type label, then he would try to take me to a hip-hop label. I'm a better label than Def Jam.
This is how we do it.
So you start to hear about legendary folks that were behind the scenes.
DJ Pete, if you don't know who Paul Stewart is, Paul Stewart, we got R&B.
That's heavy.
This dude gets people deals. Within a week, there was like the big war over this.
Yep.
All right, we can cut it there. So we seen some heavy hitters in that video, from Montel Jordan to Snoop Dogg to Sway. I'm a big supporter of Sway. I've been following him. Cube, Easy, NWA. So let's start at the beginning of your journey.
Sure.
Where does this white boy from Crenshaw stem from?
Well, you know, my dad bought a home in Baldwin Hills in, you know, like at the height of the white flight when all the white people were moving out. So by the time I was like, you know, a young kid and going to like elementary school, there were almost like no white people in the neighborhood at all. You know, I went to Baldwin Hills Elementary. We were supposed to go to Hillcrest right in the jungles. You know, my brother went there and then he got a transfer to go to Baldwin and then I switched Baldwin. So, you know, I was just really fortunate to be raised in a black community. It embraced me. You know, they were I got a lot of love. You know, I was exposed to the music and the culture as a young man. And it just shaped who I was, you know what I mean? And so then I went away to college and started DJing. Just really, you know, hip hop was young, you know, I'm an older cat, you know, so it was really early days. I started DJing and just getting involved. And after college, I moved back to LA, started doing street promotion and stuff like that. Just anywhere I could fit in, promoting clubs, parties, DJing, street promoting. Got a first couple jobs working at like record labels. And then I was just super blessed to meet John Singleton. And he hired me to work on Poetic Justice. And that really just set me off on my career, you know. That's where I met Warren G, you know, and just all kind of shit came from that.
That's big. So we talking about when you first got involved with the music scene, we talking about the 80s?
Yeah.
Back when b-boying and all of that was real dance. Big, breakdancing.
Oh, yeah. I started at the very beginning. Yeah, yeah. I had vinyl records. We're carrying crates of records around. And, you know, there's a whole, you know, some of the concepts and things that made important then, like if an artist is talented, as is the same today, and other things are completely different. You know what I mean? But, yeah, it was new, exciting genre of music, you know, and, yeah, I just had so much love for it. You know what I mean? I would DJ, parties just to do it. You know what I mean? And eventually you start getting paid and you know what I mean? You just get better at your craft. And then when I started street promoting and hustling and people out here saw I worked for labels, they start giving me their demos. And then I start getting people record deals. Back then it would be, there was no internet or anything. So you'd record your demo, we'd play it to the labels. And if they liked it, they'd sign you.
How you feel about the state of hip hop now?
Yeah, I love it, man. That Cordae, Lil Wayne joint just stopped is crazy.
Yeah, Lil Wayne went crazy.
Yeah, he barred up. He barred up on that.
They actually both were spitting on that. Yeah, I like the whole track.
I mean, look at Kendrick, what he's doing, and everything like that. I mean, I'm not one of those guys stuck in the past. You know, I listen to all new music all the time. You know, so
right.
You know, I've been evolving with it. You know, my ear evolved with it. I was blessed to work on Hustle and Flow, and so you know, when Southern Thing was really starting, I was pretty involved in, you know, in working on things like with 3-6 Mafia and stuff like that. So, you know, I keep my ear to the ground. It's just the nature of me being a lover of music, I think, and hip hop that I just like, I love the old stuff, but like, you know, we heard it enough times. So, you know, it's there, but.
Do you still like to do what you was doing before? Are you still involved with new artists now?
Oh yeah, man, you come to Lamert, catch me at Harum Coffee, you know, in Crenshaw. I'm giving seminars, helping out artists daily, you know what I mean? Like, or in the Dominican Republic, where in the barrios, in you know, the Nickerson Gardens of mm-hmm. Santo Domingo, I'm out there, you know what I mean? I go to the hood, man.
So you're outside?
Oh, I'm outside. I'm very much outside. If people had beef with me, I'd be in trouble, because I'd be in the streets. You know
how did you hook up with John Singleton back in the era where it was no Instagram to DM these people, it was no Twitter, it was no going viral?
I was on my DJ grind. This is kind of crazy, but this guy I was working for knew Benny Medina. And when they started the Fresh Prince TV show, he said, hey, we want a DJ for the show. And my buddy was a DJ, was like, had kind of grown out of DJing. He was like an executive. And he was like, nah, I don't want to do it, but hire my man DJ P, hire Paul. So I DJed for the Fresh Prince TV show for like the studio audience. Mm. And that gig, producers kept leaving that show and go to other shows. And they were like, Paul was great. So then I started doing the Martin show. And then I started doing, Patti LaBelle had this short-lived show called Out All Night. So I was DJing on the set of the TV show. John came up there to visit, heard some shit I was playing, was impressed. We started talking. At that time, I worked for Ice Cube. I was doing marketing promotion for Street Knowledge Records. They were down in Nipsey's Hood in the 60s, you know, and everything. And so he was impressed that I worked for Cube. At that time, I was a young manager. My first group was the Far Side that I really had that had blown up that I was managing at that time. He liked the Far Side. And I invited him to like a showcase I put on. We had the Unsigned Artist Showcase, you know, that I had put on. It was at the Whiskey, the Roxy, I'm sorry. And it was sold out. He came up there and was like, damn, you put this on? I was like, yeah. He goes, I want to hire you to music supervise my new movie, which was Poetic Justice, and run my record label. So, you know, I was so blessed to meet him. I was so fortunate. But when I met him, I was like hustling. There weren't like a lot of cats like me out in LA. You know what I mean? So he saw the value that I brought and he was just excited. And he was looking for somebody at that
time. So you you personally got to work with Pac then?
Yeah, yeah. I hung out with Pac pretty heavily a couple times. When they rap Poetic Justice, John Singleton took me and Tupac to Freaknik with him, and we all hung out at Freaknik.
Oh man, yeah. I know that had to be experience. Were you embraced by Pac when he first met you, being a white boy back in the predominantly black hip hop scene?
Definitely, because I managed Coolio, and he had a lot of love and respect for Coolio. And we'd share studios and stuff like that. I mean, we didn't become friends and change numbers and like that. But I was John's guy. You understand? So everybody wanted to respect John, so no one disrespects me when I'm John's guy. You know what I mean? So, but no, I felt love from him. And you know, Snoop gave me so much love because what I did for Warren, because the way I hooked Warren up when Warren was down bad, you know what I mean? When everyone else's career was taken off and Death Row wasn't messing with Warren, then I came in and got him that deal.
So were you a part of that regime when his album Save Def Jam with Def Jam was going under?
That was me.
That was all you?
That was all me.
That's crazy. Yeah, I'm
going to have to take 100% credit for that.
Shout out to Warren G. Yeah, Long Beach Save Def Jam.
Yeah, that's right. That's
they always hear us talk about that on the show, so it's crazy ironic, they 6 degrees of separation, that the man who was damn near a part of that, behind that, is here on the couch. That's crazy.
There's a longer version of my trailer where we use the quote of Russell talking about how that saved Def Jam. You know, right after Warren talking about how I got him the deal and, you know. Because it's a funny story. I was in the studio working on the Poetic Justice soundtrack, it was supposed to be a Snoop song. And they were like, you're going to get a Dog Pound song with Snoop. And then the sample didn't clear. So I spent a lot of time in Death Row Studios. And Warren came up to me one time and was like, yo, cuz, I got my own stuff, you know. And we go out to my truck and he puts in the Endo Smoke song.
Did you have any parts of him and Nate Dogg as far as when they was creating that?
Just Regulate? That
whole, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I managed him and I was in the studio when they made it and all that and everything. Yeah. And we were supposed to sign Nate Dogg to John's label. But, you know, he came in one day and said, I just signed a Death Row or whatever. So, yeah, I was around all at that time. Yeah,
So, you've been around for a while. Can you speak to the differences you would say of, like, being in a studio maybe with artists back then compared to now, as in how their work ethic is? And is it the same way they're creating music from then to now?
Well, the work ethic changed drastically because back in the day, studio time was so precious and expensive. There was no way to fuck it off. Mm. You couldn't smoke. You know what I mean? And I think, to be honest, like, the creative process is always better when it's like more relaxed and not like gotta come in and knock this out or whatever. So I think that's a positive thing. It's gone maybe way too far. You know what I mean? Where like cats just use the studio as like
kicking
to write, to kick it, to smoke, to floss, to flex or whatever, you know. And it would be better to come in there and handle your business. Unless it's a home studio and you're not paying for it, well then okay, you know, take your time, do your thing or whatever. You know what I mean? But if you're paying for it, that's silly. Even if you're a baller and you're making a lot of money, because that's going to come back out your budget and, you know.
You skipped over something notable. You said you DJed for the Martin Show and the Fresh Prince Show.
I did.
Because when you watch that show and you hear the sound effects, you never think, hey, it's an actual DJ back there.
Oh, no. I DJed for the studio
audience. The studio audience. Okay, I'm thinking you was like, the sound man.
I was entertainment.
Like during breaks.
Yeah. Okay.
Like D.L. Hewley, they brought D.L. Hewley in to do comedy on The Fresh Prince and me to DJ. And it was like, we were just for the studio audience. So it was like, we were never on camera. I don't even have a picture. Any video of that time. I don't know. It's sad.
So it was a whole thing. Like, because I only thought it was just the show. I never knew that it was people like
they busting kids in from Compton. So it would be like, you know, and from the hood, from South Central and everything like that, which was so good for me because I'm seeing the reaction as a DJ playing records. I'm playing some record. Everybody going, oh that's what's popping in the streets. I didn't even know. You know what I mean? So it was really kept me in tune. It was the most civilized DJ gig I ever had. Like, we get there like 5 in the afternoon. You sit down and eat dinner with, like, you know, Karen Parsons, Will. He was really friendly, hang out with everybody. You know what I mean? So you're hanging out with the actors, meeting people like his manager and producers. And like I said, those producers got me all those other gigs. So for me, it was just like I was networking. It was so funny. One time, Benny Medina, you know, who was the exec producer, was at the show. And he was a huge Black executive at Warner Brothers. And I had my little group, The Far Side, in the audience that I was managing, trying to get a record deal for. And I was like, Benny, you know, this is The Far Side. And he met him and was real nice to him. And I was like, thanks a lot. And I went to shake his hand and he just kept walking, man. The group never let me live that down. You know what I mean?
Like, played you like
Man. No, he didn't do it on purpose, you know.
So how many seasons were you a part of those shows?
Well, I did The Fresh Prince for like 5 seasons, you know. I think I did Martin for like 2. General Lee, I think, replaced me at some point. What happened was when John Singleton hired me, he made me quit all those shows. So he said, yeah, you're an executive in my record company.
You got to be focused.
Conflict of interest.
Yeah, you got to get focused. Right.
So were they paying for these gigs or was this like some intern thing? Like, okay, I'm getting my name out here. I'm getting known, recognition.
It was like a check. You know, it was like, I mean, it wasn't like huge. And it was like $500 a show or something. But, you know, I added up. And it was great because I could DJ later that night.
Dang, that's cool.
Like I said, it was the most civilized. I was used to going to gigs. You have to fight a motherfucker to get your money. I mean, like, the promoter leaves. I mean, just anything you can imagine as a...
It's consistent.
Consistent, regular. Yes. Yeah.
You was getting the bag.
Everyone's there. The behind the scenes part of it is so important. So I'm glad you recapped into that. Everyone's there. You show up, you don't know who's the executives of Warner Brothers are there. Remember, my mom worked at Warner Brothers. So it's a whole system behind the scenes that you want to take those jobs.
I should have worked it better, in fact. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of parlayed it, but you're like, I'm getting other DJ gigs. I should have been more like, hey, I want to produce, you know, but it's okay. I was kind of, you know, I was so, at that point, I'm working for John Singleton. You know, I mean, I'm like, I'm living
it. You enjoying the fruits of your
labor. Oh, man. Yeah. You know, I got a new Ford Explorer off the lot, Crenshaw from Crenshaw Ford. You know what I mean? I'm feeling great. You know, I'm running around. life is good. And so, you know, but yeah, it was a wonderful thing. And yeah, I met so many people. I mean, I DJed Will's first wedding from that. And I
Will Smith?
Yeah, yeah. His first, I DJed a bunch of parties for Wesley Snipes. And a lot of those things came from the connection, the Hollywood connections I made.
Yeah, 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 you was definitely tapped in. Now, growing up in Crenshaw,
yeah,
you grew up in the 60s?
No. I grew up in Baldwin Hills.
Okay, Baldwin Hills. Yeah, all right. Yeah. Okay, that's cool.
But you know, when you're driving down Stalker to get in, my neighbor says you went into the Crenshaw area. So I feel very, and I live spitting distance from the Jays, right next to the jungle. So I feel very confident in just, you know, claiming my Crenshawness. You know what I mean? I live there now.
White boy from Crenshaw.
I live in Jefferson and Crenshaw. You can find me.
Now he wanted to stamp that. It sounds better.
Yeah. You know, exactly. It's funny because
you was more like towards the hills, right?
Oh yeah, like, yeah. I was in the nice part. But you know what's funny? That is part of the Crenshaw district, like I said. But you know what's funny is when I was in the music industry too. When I first got, you know, really growing, everything like that, people didn't even know where I was from. Being a white guy from that neighborhood, I wasn't the kind of guy to walk around and go like, oh, I'm from, I have no tattoos. That should have been corny for me. So people thought I was from New York. You know what I mean? Right. And it's funny, when I came up with the idea of the White Boy from Crenshaw, like, documentary and put this little thing together, I was sitting at Haroon Coffee in Crenshaw and Leimert one day, and I said, I came up with the name. It just popped in my head, White Boy from Crenshaw. Oh, man, that's like clickbait. Like, people are going to trip on that. Like, you just want to watch that. What is that? You know, because
it's going to stick.
Right, yeah. Right. So I had the name. Okay, I'm going to roll with that. And that's kind of what started the whole concept.
So when you DJ, y'all were actually scratching records and breaking records back then. Now they using these MacBooks. And so do you respect the DJs now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the tools aren't what make a DJ good or not. You know what I mean? Like, we had to carry crates. It was a whole different thing. But I got ultimate respect for DJs that are good and playing good music and however they do it. I mean, all the good DJs from back then switched to this. You have 100,000 songs on that laptop and walking the party. You know, we carrying three crates is like 300 records or, you know. It's just, and so many more things you can do if you're actually talented. So yeah, I got immense respect. I'm not one of them guys stuck in the past. But, you know, we laid the groundwork. We did a lot of great shit. Let's appreciate what's happening now.
I like
and
that
how
you
we
say
can
that.
Apply it to what's going on now. How do you feel about help people now?
No, go ahead.
How do you feel about the state of West Coast rap right now?
Oh, good. I mean, you know, there's like, I wouldn't call Blast a rapper, but I love his music, right? You know, so there's a lot of good music coming from out here that's kind of hip hop oriented, you know. I mean, what Kendrick just did, I mean, when you just heard that Mustard beat from Not Like Us just come on, it was like the West is back. Like, just overnight, out of nothing. You know what I mean? Yeah. But yeah, I mean, we lost a lot when we lost Nip, man. You know what I mean?
We lost a lot when we lost Nip.
We lost a lot of professionalism with it.
That was so sad.
We lost a lot of realism.
He was just a staple.
Yeah, because me personally, I think the state of the West is like 911 emergency right now. As far as talent-wise, we have a lot of artists and they're dropping a lot of music, but I'm just going to call a spade, a lot of that shit trash, man. Like, you could sum it up to me being stuck in the past, but I'm just a fan of the art. I'm a fan of creativity, lyricism, bars. Like, I'm a fan of artistry. I don't want to hear this bubblegum pop a perk, sip some lean. Like, that's just not cool to me. And you can only rap about money so much. What the fuck else you got to rap about? Is anything real going on in your life? Anything real happened to you growing up? What type of life experiences have you been through? And you don't hear that in the music right now, currently today. It's like, yeah, we got Kendrick. That's cool. Kendrick is one man. This is the whole coast. Like, growing up, we had artists. Like, you didn't have to wait on Snoop. You didn't have to wait on Warren. You didn't have to wait on, like, we just had artists just dropping, and it was quality. I think we're lacking quality right now. Like you said, Nip, he was filling that void. And then after him, I haven't seen anybody step up to that plate.
I will say I feel you on the content of the lyrical content, period, in hip-hop not being as, you know, talking about the same shit over and over again is getting really tired. Yeah, like, talk about some other shit. And I feel you. There's not like we don't have, other than like Kendrick, like if you look at the Pop Out concert, for example, and you look at the whole list or whatever, like, yeah, there wasn't like, you know, in my neighborhood, they was mad. They were saying we was underrepresented, you know? And so I was saying, okay, well, who should have been there? You know what I mean? Like, you know, like if that's the case, you know? So yeah, I could kind of feel you, but you know, at the same time, I think, you know, oh man, there's a lot of artists don't get to shine. Like Buddy is dope as fuck. There's a lot of dope West Coast artists that aren't necessarily, you know, getting as much shine as they should, you know what I mean? But that we do have some dope artists out here. But it's not like this big wave movement type of thing like has been at other times.
But you know what's crazy? Because I think actually what Kendrick has done and showed that it could be done by having so many artists, if these artists were smart, they would make that more so as, I wouldn't say a trend, but say maybe every other month you get artists to come together and make a big performance. Or however you got to do that to see these new artists. And not even just new artists, just artists in general. Yeah. To where y'all keep coming together and keep making a wave of that versus just everybody trying to be separate and go their own way without making no noise. Because you bring all of them in one stadium, a lot of people is going to want
to
be there.
Well, to your point too, I mean, I think one of the reasons the South is has such a big run is that they collabed and they worked more together. Mm-hmm. The studios where they were all doing records and stuff together. And out here we got gang politics and all this shit, you know, stopping people from working together and just kind of an overall, like, maybe lack of creativity. I mean, but man, too, we got artists like Tyler. I mean, I fucking love Tyler, the creator. Yeah. You know, so there are a lot of dope artists.
I didn't even know he was from the West Coast.
Yeah, he's from
LA. Yeah.
I'm not too familiar with Tyler's music. I mean, they really must be.
You should check it out. I mean, because you say you like lyrics. And I'll you're put like, you hey, on that dude can rap. Yeah, he got some.
Yeah. And he's creative. He creative as fuck. I mean,
I think one issue with the West Coast is the DJ is not supporting the West Coast. So if you turn on the radio, it sounds like every other region other than the West Coast. So how do you feel about those politics? Because a lot of artists will tell you, we don't get support. It's payola. You got to pay to play. And even if you're paying, if you ain't connected to the right names, they ain't even taking your money to play your shit.
Right, right. Well, I think if you're waiting on the radio to break your records, you in the wrong business. You might as well quit right now. It's over for you, man. This is social media era. This is the, you know what I mean? Like, look at what people are doing. They're making one record and it's coming hot and it's, you know, and all of a sudden they a force to be reckoned with. And then what do they do? You know what I mean? Yeah. A lot of them fall off, you know? Especially in the TikTok era, because a lot of artists blow up because their song goes viral on TikTok and they don't really have anything to follow it up with or whatever. You know what I mean? So, I think it's a better time than ever to be an independent artist because you can do more for yourself like that. So, yeah, fuck the DJs, fuck the radio. Nah, that ain't going to help you. Those are big corporations, big corporate stuff. That's for the major label shit. And when you get there and you're playing that game, you know what I mean? That's what you're a part of. But right now, do what you're supposed to do. Grind.
Do you feel like there's any benefits of an artist signing with a label? Because we hear a lot of talk about being independent. That's the way. For me, I'm younger. Like the first person in my mind was Dom Kennedy, who really, really pushed being like OPM. I'm independent.
Sure.
He was one of the first people who pushed that. So how do you feel about that? Like, is there any time where somebody should go to the label?
Yeah. I'm not anti-labels, but though I do have a lot of like, you know, negativity towards their negative practices and stuff like that that they've been doing for years. But if you go in, first of all, when you have more leverage to go in, then they start offering totally different deals, right? Mm-hmm. And they have monopolies in certain things like radio and things like this. Now the streaming playlists and everything that can really elevate and boost you. And they can spend a lot of money on you that you don't have to spend. Now, you know, I seen this really interesting with Almighty J the other day. Some people are saying it's cap or whatever. But, you know, he talked about how he got smart and had a company. You know, he built a studio in his house. He realized that his biggest hit was some shit he made at his crib on some booty little equipment or whatever. And then he's spending all this money on big studios and stuff. You know what I mean? Mm. And he's going to have to pay all that back. So he started, he created an LLC of a studio. And he said, yeah, this studio you're going to use. And didn't tell him, but it was in his house. And they just start cutting all the checks to him or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I don't know. And he said he left with very good positive relationships with them and everything like that. Seems like he somehow maybe got some of his catalog or maybe some of a new catalog from there. I don't know. I think if you go into it as a business relationship and you realize what you're getting into, I think it can be good, you know, because you're going to have a lot more resources at your disposal. If you're ignorant and unaware that you're going to have to pay all this money back and doing all this kind of shit, yeah, it's going to be a nightmare for you probably. You know what I mean? And they're a little shady and underhand. And you look at cats like NBA Youngboy signed so young. And he's like, I'll give you 5 more albums. Just give me my master's back. And they're like, nah. You know what I mean? Like, they're kind of dirty. You know what I mean? So, you know, even But sometimes, though, when the artist gets more leverage, they really have to, like, it changes the dynamic, you know what I mean? And it does hurt them when people, like, say, don't sign to Atlantic or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they do kind of want to, like, keep the big independent artists from, you know, really bringing out their dirt in public. And they want to keep those people happy because hopefully they can keep the business relationship going with them.
What you said about...
Hold on, I want to shout out Tech N9ne because we're talking about independent, and I think he like laid the ultimate blueprint. Like he done got a bag.
Super G in it.
Off the independent grind. Like his name is probably
Dave Weiner, who helped him too. Yeah, behind the scenes guy. Yeah.
I don't believe it's for everybody though.
Well, I know Joyner Lucas be getting a bag. I don't know if he signed to a label.
Speaking of leverage and stuff too, there's a story. I don't know if y'all seen that ever. Nipsey told about 50 Cent telling him, don't drop any albums. Do mixtapes until your first album. And that way, by the time you make that first album, you'll have more to leverage when you do bring that up to for distribution or to the label. You
drop an album and go wood, then not a regular. Right. Like,
so he's like, you can leverage
nothing to compare.
I think it's a little bit of a case by case, right? Because like that's one of the strategies they used to do NBA YoungBoy wrong. Mm. Oh, these ain't albums, they're mixtapes. So we're not counting them against your thing or whatever, you know. So.
Nah, he means, see YoungBoy was signed, Nipsey wasn't signed.
Right,
so
right.
No,
when you do negotiate,
they have nothing to compare it to. So they can't say your numbers is going to do this or that.
Right.
But let's be real, we in the era of the streaming. So album sales is kind of, it's out the window a little bit.
Well, album sales are streaming numbers. It's the same difference. Anybody seen the interview with Sauce Walker?
He's going crazy right now. He's saying he
makes between $50,000 to $200,000 a month. And let's not talk about what Russ is making. You know what I mean? On his streaming. So I mean, I think this shows like, the streaming payout sucks and all that and everything, but you know, there's also a lot of advantages to the streaming platform. You get paid every single time somebody listens to it. There's no manufacturing costs. There's no returns. There's no, you know what I mean?
What's the shipping budget on the streaming though?
It's horrific. But you know, if we want to look to blame to that, don't blame the streaming companies, blame the major labels. They're the ones that got big checks at the beginning and didn't share it with the artists. They all own equity in Spotify. You know, all the major labels own equity in Spotify. So, I mean, you know,
they're not. It's like, he's making $200,000, but how much should he really be making? How much is the people behind that making? They probably making way more than him, quadruple that.
Because they getting pennies on a dollar for those streams. Exactly. Even Snoop came out saying, like, damn, I had to get a billion streams to get $10,000 or something crazy.
I hear you and I feel you and you're right. I remember I used to work with Lady Gaga's manager and he spoke on a panel one time and they were talking about it. He said, artists never participate in the money from their record sales hardly. Like, we've been making money off the touring, all this stuff, from back to like the Motown day. You know what I mean? Mm. So ain't much really changed in some regards to that. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, I feel like, you know, we can try to push rocks uphill or we could just try to deal with what is the current system and shit. $200,000 a month, maybe he should be making $2 million, but damn, he don't look too upset about it. You know what I mean? And he's creating opportunities for all his other people. The biggest part of that thing, I think, was that he not making all that money because just his records. He got about 100 some releases with people that he's 50-50 on, that he's putting through his thing. Mm. So, you know, it's a combination of all that equals that, you know what I mean?
How do you feel about new artists like Four Bats, Cash Cobain, people who kind of only have a sound, Tommy Richmond, people who have a sound on a song, but then in live is different? How do you feel about those types of artists?
Well, I think, first of all, that Four Bats marketing thing was genius, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the reaction channels, the dude come out with the shiesty on, and there's like 800 thugs behind him, and he starts singing like The Weeknd or whatever. Whoa, you know, that was brilliant, you know. Would you say Cash Cobain, and who else did you say?
You got like, I'm trying to think of other people, Tommy Richmond.
Oh, you mean how the songs are bigger than the artist? Was that your point or no?
Kind of how like they can't, how they sound on the song, they don't sound like live.
Well, that's been happening since the beginning of time. I mean, you know, we people record people and they can't, somebody else was singing in the background, the guy looked better, so he's the singer or whatever. You know what I mean? So it is what it is, you know. True performing and skills like that, that's a true artistry and it means something, you know, and it helps a lot of independent artists really grow because they go out there and they, make fans, like diehard fans, because that's the shit right now. Like, yeah, you can have a Tommy Richmond record, maybe. I mean, that's going to be really rare, right? But what there's a whole lot of artists that's growing their fan base small by small. And if you got 1,000 hardcore fans right now, you know, charge them all $5 a month to be members, give them special privileges or whatever, and you're clearing 5 racks a month, at least from your art, you know what I mean? On top of anything else, other income streams, licensing, music licensing, like I do, which is something we definitely need to talk about at some point, you know what I mean? And, you know, any other kind of royalties you are getting from streaming or, you know.
What's your advice to the artist?
Merch.
What's your advice to the artist right now who they would be more so rapping about uplifting type of content or positive content, but the industry, they have certain agendas where they don't want that to get out. And if you're not talking destruction or some homosexual LGBT related content, you can't even get a deal. You can't get no streaming money. Well, you can't get anything. You're damn near blacklisted and blackballed.
What's my man from the Midwest that does the concerts in his backyard?
You talking about Russ? LaRussell?
LaRussell.
But he's, I think he's from the Bay.
He's from the Bay.
Right, okay, right. But that dude, right. Okay, I mean, look, he's on some positive shit. You know what I mean? He's not, you know, look, you just got to build your, like, fuck a deal. You know what I mean? Like, no, there's no deals out here for you, no matter what you're doing or saying. You know what I mean? So it's just like, until you build up your audience and then they come and you decide. And if you're this kind of artist and let's say maybe they're not interested in you because they don't see a bigger side, so what? You're making a living from your art. You're controlling everything. You know what I mean? So it's like that dude, LaRussell, man, he was brilliant in his marketing strategies and stuff. You know what I mean? So it's like he built up his fan base. And now, you know, he's another one that's not mad at streaming at all because he's making a nice income from streaming because he's got a big ass catalog and he's got a lot of fans. You know what I mean?
I don't know. From what I've seen all the artists really crying about the streaming and trying to actually right now, I think the wave a lot of artists I'm seeing doing, they're just starting their own websites, taking it off streaming because they're getting raped beyond belief, even worse than CDs. And it's like, if you want my music, come buy it through my website I can get all my dollars.
No, because if Snoop got something to say about it, it's a problem.
It's bad.
Because we know he ain't hurting for
it. Yeah, it sounds cool, $200,000 a month, but if I'm looking at the spreadsheet and I'm really supposed to be getting $2 million a month, it's like, wait a minute. Yeah, $200,000 is good, but we got to figure this out because this ain't making no sense.
I'm all about artists getting paid. I have been my whole career, you know? So, I mean, if taking your music off streaming is going to make you more money, then do it. Great. You know what I mean? And I know people like James Blake and stuff, some more substantial artists are doing things in this to start their own kind of things or whatever. And I think it can be cool, but I mean, just I'm a consumer of music, right? And I know if you take your music off them platforms, I'm not really going to be listening to it personally, right? And I'm a pretty avid music listener. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm much more into music than your average person. So your average person, you know, but you could probably get your Uber fans to do that. And that's cool.
Uber fans is crazy.
Uber fans is crazy. You can also do that and be on the streaming services. You can offer it for the first 30 days and things like that to your fans and do all these kind of things and then drop it on the DSPs. I'm more a fan of that kind of
stuff. See, but if all artists decide to get off the streaming and take different routes, you ain't going to have a choice if you're still going to listen to their music. Versus, like you said, you're going to listen to it on these platforms. But if they all decide to do that, which we know they're not.
Right.
But I just think everybody should take a different route with that. Like you said, even staying independent. So what's your advice to new artists that's trying to get in with labels? Like, far as what was your sauce, how you was getting everybody deals?
Oh, well, like it was a different era then. I just had to have good music. And once I started getting some people deals, then people are like, you know what I mean? And then some of the groups I worked with, like House of Pain, they came out under Cypress Hill. So when I was shopping their demo, Cypress Hill hadn't blown up yet. So people were like, Then as soon as Cypress Hill started bubbling, you know, somebody wanted to sign them. You know what I mean? Or whatever. So some of the stuff I did was affiliated. And so it had that kind of cachet or whatever. But a lot, it was just like playing stuff for people. They like it. They see the vision or whatever too. I mean, my advice to artists now is simple. It's just what I said. It's like, grow your fans. You know, spend a lot of energy devoting to anyone who is giving you energy. Give them back energy. You know, create content for your fans, interact with your fans, you know, and try to bring value. You know what I mean? And if you grow, the labels will come. If you want to deal with a label and you get your numbers up, they all going to come.
It's like the music going to speak for itself. Yeah,
so safe to say talent is damn near irrelevant in this generation? As long as you got a following, people to look at you and companies can see, I can sell things through you because you have a following. I don't give a fuck about your talent.
I would say this. It's more important. Right. Like Bad Baby going to get a deal before you know, the next Kendrick who got 500 followers or whatever.
See, that's,
you know,
what I'm saying? Right? That's disgusting,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, but it is what it is. Like I said, we can fight it or we can go with it. You know what I mean? So, I mean, the thing is, like, the young artist who's super talented, it doesn't have any social media, when he, you know, if he figures it out or finds a partner to help him figure it out, you know what I mean? Then he can be a much bigger artist than the flash in the pan. I was a model. I was a comedian. I already had a following. So now I'm going to make records. You know what I mean?
Bad Baby is the Catch Me Outside?
Yeah, this whole thing. You know?
That's what I'm saying.
Hey, look, this is what I want you to understand, though, too. If you're a record label,
right,
and you're looking at spending a whole lot of money to promote an artist, you don't want to start from scratch in this era. You don't want to start with that guy who's super talented that got 500 followers. Like, go get your shit up and come back, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, find a partner who can help you and get shit up and come back. This bitch already got 8 million followers, so we're going to make some trashy, you know, disposable popcorn records on her, and it's going to be a much better bet financially than trying to put a whole bunch of money into developing you, who are talented, but you might go left. You might get in the streets and get arrested. You might not, you know, deliver. You know, at the end of the day, too, there's a lot of different kind of talents. Songwriting is what, it, at the end of the day, like, can you write a hit? If you can write a hit, someone's going to give you money. They're going to sign you. You know, it'd be one thing that you can rap, you look good, you got flavor, you know, or whatever. You got a good voice and you can sing or whatever like that. That's a dime a dozen. But if you can write hits, that's invaluable. You're a writer, irregardless if you're an artist. You know what I mean? So...
I hear you from that. Yeah. From a business aspect, it makes sense. From a consumer aspect and thinking about the people that's consuming it, I got a different view on it. But like I said, I don't own a record company. I'm not in it to make the money off these artists. But to me, just the exploitation I see and how it affects communities specifically, communities where you come from and communities where we come from, it's a big fucking problem. So I try to always preach bringing the art back to where it'll reflect in the communities.
No, I love that. And, you know, I put my money where my mouth is. Like I said, I'm in the communities. I'm outside helping artists, you know, learn about the industry. I've helped so many artists get their first placement in film and TV in just the last couple years. You know, I've been doing this since the 80s, but in the last couple years, I did that show on HBO, The Hype. And I did this show, Rhythm and Flow, that's about to drop right now.
Dope.
I got, you know, which Cardi B was on last time, and now we have Lotto and Khaled and Ludacris as the host. I got hundreds of independent artists' music placed on these shows. Got them paid. Might not have been a huge amount of money, but it got them paid. It was a non-exclusive license, so they own everything. They get royalties from when it plays on TV through BMI or ASCAP, or the Performing Rights Society they're signed up to. And they get exposure and people are Shazamming their song. It's streaming more, you know, like it's something for them to talk about on their social media or whatever. So this is something I've been doing for like the last couple of years. And I also started a consulting service. Any independent artists out there, I highly recommend you do a 30-minute consulting session with me. I've helped so many people that have hired me to do that, to get placements in film and TV, because not only do I listen to your music in advance and study it, so I can give you like real, you know, critical critique for what you need, but then I extend opportunities for you to submit for the shows I'm working on, and I also submit music for like Marvel shows and all kinds of shows.
So you tapped in. Are you still connected with the labels now? So if an artist came to you like, hey man, I'm trying to get a deal, are you still ciphering them through the labels, or are you so telling them, look,
I mean, some of these guys that are running these labels like did street team work for me and stuff. So like I know the people, but it's like they don't, I still have to have the, you know, that person with those numbers or whatever, you know, that story going. But yeah, I know those people, but it's not really my business. I've been focused on the music supervision, the music placement, helping any artists get music that way. But man, I'm looking. I'd love to find that next, you know, really hot artist that's getting some shit going on. And then we could take it and get a deal or develop it independently and show that, you know, and consult and be a part of it or whatever, because there is a lot of money to be made independently now. You know what I mean? Like at the end of the day, if you're looking at this as a business, right, you know, how can I make the most amount of money going inside to a label or doing it independently? It really depends, because you're going to have to build up your business pretty far anyway. So by the time they come to give you that money, you're going to be looking at them possibly sideways, like I can do it myself. You know what I mean? But a lot of artists, like some of these artists that we talked about earlier, they got a lot of money spent on them, marketing money spent on them, their major labels. Then they got dropped, and then they were able to keep a decent amount of their fan base. And you know what I mean? So it really depends how you go in, you know, how's your team, what's your mentality. But yeah, let's go. Hit me up, man. I'm easy to find. You know, I'm on Instagram. You guys will put my stuff in the
Tap in.
Do you think it matters in this era now as far as classic albums? I feel like before, when music was at a state where the more I listen to it, the more I appreciate it. Now, sometimes I'm listening to music and it's depreciating the more I hear it. Like, every time it's just going from sugar to shit. So now it's like, before shit marinated for years over time. Like, even like, in my opinion, I haven't really heard no classic albums since maybe Nipsey Hussle. And I think Kendrick, I liked it. A lot of people didn't like that, but I did like the Mr. Morale. Yeah. That was a great album for us from an aspect of his perspective and fatherhood and all that type of stuff. So
it's crazy you say that, because Victory Lap literally is the probably the last album that I still I think is a classic, and I still slap low-key every day to this day right now.
Yeah, I think the album format isn't as important as it used to be also. So I think that's one of the reasons people aren't delivering classic albums, right?
It's like more just dropping singles.
Yeah, it's more about singles. You know, some of these artists like the Ice Spices in the world don't need to be dropping albums. They should just keep dropping singles. They're tripping, you know, trying to put out albums, I think, but whatever. But I don't know, man. I think we got more classics coming. I think that this Drake Kendrick beef was so interesting in so many ways. And it was a big win for artistry, I think, you know. He's going to inspire, you know. I mean, you got teachers talking about my whole school was Team Drake, and now they're all Team Kendrick. Them little kids are listening to Kendrick. They're going to go back and listen to Mad City and Butterfly. You know, they're going, wow, what the fuck is this? You know, and people are going to be discovering this kind of artistry thing and stuff. So I think we're going to see more of it, and things go in cycle. It depends what kind of artist you are. Adele's fans probably think her albums are classics. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but what I mean, I'm speaking on the state of hip-hop. Yeah. Because we don't see the same problems when it comes to pop artists and a lot of shit that these rappers deal with. They ain't worried about
who you had winning in that Kendrick and Drake beef.
I mean, is that a question?
Yeah, for sure, because some people said they had Drake still.
Oh, wow.
I had Kendrick, but some people Academics is still saying he has Drake winning.
Those people have no value to give opinions. Those people shouldn't be giving opinions. I mean, you got the whole world screaming about this man's a PDF file. Come on, man. At Laker games, Dodger games. I mean,
PDF files.
I seen it in Toronto going, getting lit the other day. Come on, man. This, you know, and the things he's saying about him in that song or whatever, I mean, there's no... there's no coming back. I mean, it's not even close. I mean, it's not, you know. I mean, he had beat him. I mean, when he dropped Meet the Grams 20 minutes after Family Matters, he crushed him. He stomped on his head.
Stomped his ears together.
When he put out Not Like Us. I mean, that was just the no question.
They was using that shit on the news. They was using that shit on all types.
Yeah, he stomped his ears together for sure. And what's up with Toronto canceling any shows that's connected to TDE? Well, like anybody from the West that tries to book shows out there right now?
That one venue, though, it's got his Instagram tag in their thing. So it's like, book another venue. Like, I mean, other venue, you know, it's like, come on, man. You know.
Nah, he's trying to shut down everything out there, though.
Do you think Drake can make a comeback? Like, because everything he's dropped since Not Like Us has been a dud.
Yeah. I mean, I think that he can come back if he puts out good music, but I also think that he hasn't been putting out good music for a while. I think that's his problem. It's like, people are tired of
him. People caught on, huh?
Yeah, he was already, he was like weak because he was already like, people weren't really feeling what he was doing. And then it was like, you know, the 21 album was pretty cool or whatever, but the other two albums, I didn't like. And I like Drake's music a lot, actually, you know?
And so
I feel like he fell off. And this other thing is just like, he's really getting up there in age, but he's like not owning it. And he's still trying to do all this young shit. And it's just ringing so false. So he got to like understand what he is as an artist. And like,
he need an ego death.
Yeah.
But I think what a lot of people, like, they felt like Drake boosted a lot of people's careers, but it actually worked in both ways. By him getting on these new people's songs, jumping on these tracks and keeping himself relevant, that was his crutch to last.
It was smart marketing. But it did help both sides.
I don't think you'll ever be the same. He'll never be the same.
Without all the features now, this is what we're starting to see now. Like you said, things are a dud.
So what's your ultimate mission now in music, being involved with the industry? Because you done it all, seen it all. So as of right now, are you just out to help new artists, or you just love it so much? So you, any way you can, you trying to stay involved? What's your mission?
Kind of both those things. I mean, you know, I'm trying to put my skill set to where it's best of use. You know what I mean? I'm working on a video game that's being developed right now that's very rap-centric, you know, so that would have like a lot of big-name rappers in it if we get that going. And then mainly I work with independent artists every day, you know, helping them get their music placed in film and TV and, you know, consulting them about how to do it, you know, and teaching people about the music industry, working on some philanthropic, like educational things where I'll be like teaching young people how to avoid some of these bad deals and, you know, and understand the business so they can, you know, not suffer the thing, like what you were discussing earlier. So that's really my priority. You know, I'm working on those things both in the Crenshaw community where I'm from and the greater South Central Compton Watts area. I have something going on at Centennial High soon that I should be working on. And then in Santo Domingo in the Dominican Republic, where I've been spending a lot of time, I'm equally involved in like the poor neighborhoods there and trying to educate people and give opportunities in the music industry.
So for artists who want to make it big,
yeah,
are the rumors true? Do you have to go through certain doors and do certain acts to reach certain levels?
No, that's bullshit, man. That, you know, these conspiracy theories things, some of them are based in truth, right? Okay, so you got a powerful gay executive, right? And maybe he told some dudes, like, you want to get a deal. You know what I mean? That's one executive at one country, at one company. It's not some conspiracy of dudes behind the room, like, you got to give us a blood. You know, that this shit is all, people make money from this kind of, like, outrageous content and stuff. And so there's a reason for people to keep perpetuating these stories and stuff. You know what I mean? But from what I witnessed, and I got pretty high up, I seen a lot of greed of rich people, you know what I mean? Like exploiting younger people, white and black people doing that.
You never got
buddy approached. Buddy together.
You never got approached to go through that second door?
No. That's what I'm asking. I don't believe
them folks
in
that. That
I
mean, never came knocking.
We see so many artists that's talking about it. You know what I mean? So we should
most of them seem like they got an agenda to do it. Like I say, that's gonna get you hits and clicks. You know, this is a click driven society, you know what I mean? So you say some old boring shit like, oh yeah, they dropped me because my records weren't selling. You know what I mean?
Is it hits and clicks when we start to see them put on dresses and paint their nails and doing their hair, like, you know what I mean?
I don't think anybody forced Young Thug to put on a dress.
I'm not saying right. him in general, right. but we see a lot of these people once they start reaching a certain pinnacle, yeah, then they start to do a lot of weird shit, just out the blue.
It get weird, the higher they get, the more weird it get.
I think that's like people that make too much money get bored. You see this in all areas, not just music, right? You know what I mean? And just all kind of, they start getting weirder.
But we had never seen DMX do none of the weird shit like that. No. So I can't put
And he got quite high in the industry, you know what I mean? So, I mean, even, you know, even if you listen to things that like what Ice Cube is talking about, right? Like he's talking about that some of the major labels have stakes in like prisons and stuff like that, you know, for-profit prisons, which is true. You know, that's a fact. You know what I mean? So, you know, then you can say, okay, so the next step is they're promoting drill and rap and gangster rap, you know, to feed these prisons or whatever, right? You know what I mean?
Kill two birds with one stone. If you blow up, right. we make money off of you. Right. Take your ass to jail, we make money off of you.
He never told a story about going into the second room where they were like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, so I... and
nah, he spoke on far as high powers doing certain things that might blackball them or won't allow you to get to certain places. So... I don't know. Yeah. It's different strokes. You know more than me, though. So
I only ask because these stories been around before the clicks. Like I'm talking about back in the night. Like they always floated around.
Right,
it's
right.
just social media. Elevated it kind of exploded. Yeah.
So you never ran to the Illuminati. So is that's all smoke and mirrors to the people?
To me, that's complete smoke and mirrors. Yeah. I mean, like, okay. The thing is that I think it's an old boys club. You might have five guys, white guys playing golf that run the music industry or something like that. This kind of shit is true. You know what I mean? And they might be, but they don't like each other. They be backstabbing each other. So it's not like they're going to come up on one thing that they all going to agree to. Like everybody got to go through the gay ritual. You know what I mean? Or whatever. So I think that people take things of like, there's a lot of racism in the entertainment business and in the music business, right? You got a lot of old white men like, from disco, old Jewish dudes in New York, and I'm not singling out Jewish people or anything like that, but they were a lot of Jewish people in New York. There were like disco labels making money off that, that turned into rap labels at the beginning of rap, kind of exploiting people. They didn't know what publishing was or anything like that. You know, so there's a long history of like, oh, don't start about the Motown era, give motherfuckers cars instead of royalties. There's a long history of ripping off poor people, especially people of color in the music industry. But I don't see it as some kind of concerted conspiracy, Illuminati. It's just greed at the end of the day to me, you know. That's what it is. But, you know, there's a lot of funny style people in there. So, yeah, you do have, you know, your Diddy's and all this kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Who use their power to probably tell people like, yeah, you're gonna take care of me or I'm going to fire you. You're not going to be my intern anymore. That's a true story. A dude just came out.
Yeah, just with me, I see it. It's a war on masculinity worldwide. And it's taking a big hit in the hip hop industry. So right. I would like to see more masculine rappers back. I don't want to turn on the TV and see my favorite rapper in a dress or painting his fucking nails. Like, right. Okay, cool. If it's a lane for that, right. Cool, do that. Make right. your money. But it seems as if you're not with that, they're not putting you out and they're not promoting you. You're not getting no publicity or anything. So that's where the conspiracy comes, because it goes, right. All right, it's going to go on. But how come these masculine normal guys that's, you know, telling men to, hey, be strong and be this and be that, they seem to be getting blackballed or they seem to not be getting no airwaves. So that's when it starts to get looking crazy.
Can we all just get along? I mean, no. For sure. For me, man, it's like there's a lot of negative things about the industry. I never seen any crazy Illuminati shit or whatever like that. But I just try to help artists, whatever their vibe or thing is, you know, help them be successful. You know what I mean? And definitely, like, you know, I do feel you a little bit as an old school cat. Some of these things can tend to make me a little uncomfortable or whatever. But I try to be really open minded, you know what I mean? And just support artistry and just support good business. You know what I mean? And just support, you know, people learning about the business they're getting into or whatever.
You weren't fucking with them Diddy parties back in the day?
I got a great picture with Quincy Jones, Quincy Jones' son, this woman named Michelle Thomas, RIP, who was an actress back in the day on some TV shows, and me at one of Diddy's white parties. And it's funny because I was in New York and they were like, oh, there's a white party. And I got a clean white tee. I had some like off-white shorts and some brand new Air Force Ones. I was like West Coast white gangster to the fullest.
Pro club on?
Yeah, it was a pro club for sure. But, you know, that was the only Diddy party I think I ever went to. It was at a restaurant. You know what I mean? It was a public place in New York.
He's like, let me
tell you. He was 100% right.
Let me throw that out there. It was in the public.
One after party. Yeah. So I never, I never seen none of that.
Well, that's good. You fortunate enough not to go through
that. Yeah, I didn't get invited. Because
a lot of people had to go through that.
So I did go to a Diddy party. I did go to a white party, at least one. I've probably been to another one. I think I went to another one. I mean, you know, man, when you do this for so long, you kind of be forgetting shit.
Hollywood?
Yeah, I think I went to one in a Hollywood, some mansion or something they rented or whatever, you know. But I mean, for, you know, heterosexual men like myself, Diddy parties were the shit. I mean, there was a lot of women there. You know what I mean? There was a lot of women there. So you're never going to hear me complain about, you know, going to a Diddy party or something like that or whatever, you know, and God bless them other guys, just one woman for us. You know,
how you feel about industry plants?
That's an interesting topic. You know, I think some people get accused of being an industry plant that aren't, you know, but it's definitely like a thing that's going on. It's not cool to be from the majors, right? So, you know, the majors sign these artists and they try to make them seem like they're independent. So, yeah, you know, it's a little janky. You know, I try to support really independent artists. But, you know, if someone's making good music, they're making good music, man.
Right.
Do you respect artists who have ghostwriters but claim to be MCs? Because you're from the golden era where ghostwriting, you was out the game if you found out you had a damn ghostwriter. You was an MC. You wasn't getting no respect at all. Now, it's just looked at, okay, oh, he's an artist. And
It's funny. I thought about that yesterday. And I was like, you know, at the end of the day, if I like the song, I like the song. I guess I really don't give a fuck. I mean, it kind of affects maybe how I think about you as an artist.
But you make good music.
Right. Like, because I think about how many of these Drake songs didn't he write? Well, who cares? I still like the song. Like, but maybe that's because it's that kind of music. You know, if I was looking at him as being like Rakim or, you know what I mean? Or Ice Cube or one of the MCs that I really respected, you know. But it's interesting. Like, you know, you find out that like Jay-Z wrote that Snoop Dre thing or whatever. Right. You know
still,
what I mean?
Still
and then you find, you know, like I know Snoop's written for other people. Snoop's super talented as a writer. You can't say he's not. You know what I mean? But like, so, you know, there's been some things that we find out later that happened that are very interesting, you know, And some, oh man, of course, it sounds just like a, you know, like a Jay, you know, him doing that, you know. So I don't know, man.
Now, but Jay made that sound like a straight West Coast banger for sure.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did.
So basically, if you're a fan of the Golden Era, you got to go back and listen to what was made in the Golden Era. That shit over with. Like, this is the new wave, pretty much. The TikTok, streaming, make a hit. No substance. That's what it is. Well, you just get used to it. Type
shit. Just talking about that little Wayne verse on that new Corday track. I mean, that's a sample based.
Wayne from the era, though. Right, Wayne is right, Wayne is one of the goats. You feel
but Corday ain't.
Well, yeah, nah, Corday ain't. Corday ain't.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's from Gen Z, so his generation, they got like a whole different sound.
He studied Golden Era hip hop, and you can hear it in his music. I mean, I think all these young artists should listen to old music. That's something I don't like. That they haven't appreciated, like listen to it.
That's why they don't have no respect for the older ones still rapping.
Yeah. That I don't like. Like, make whatever music you want, but like study what came before you so you know what's up. You know, when these artists are just haven't even listened to like important artists, like, you know, because I mean, you know, we was listening to James Brown and all that shit before there was hip hop. You know what I mean? Man. So we was listening to Stevie Wonder, you know what I mean? So I mean, like, come on, man. Like, do your if you're an artist, if you're a music artist, and like you said, put the art first, man. If you're a music artist, study your craft, you know?
New kids just grow up so anti, like, past, anti, like, fuck the adults type shit, where it's like they don't want to look at anything they've done, a lot of them. I think with growth and maturity, you start to look back as you get older. But especially when kids are younger, they really like, fuck all that shit that they was doing before me.
I guess we did the same in some regards. I mean, people were saying our music was, like, not music. You know, that's just a generational thing a little bit.
What can artists do, or the industry, period? Because I feel like rap is the only industry where this is the issue, where there's an age cap. There's an age cap. So it's like, once you hit 30, you're lame, you old, you're a cornball, we don't want to hear your music no more.
But a lot of the biggest artists is quite old, too, right now.
Yeah. Right.
I think I saw a really interesting thing where they were talking about we need a chart, like, how they have, like, adult R&B. We need, like, adult rap.
Oh, yeah.
At first, I was like, they're tripping. But then after I thought a little more, oh, they're really right. I was like, because they were like, how can Eminem be on the same chart as Ice Spice? Or how can we? They kept making these examples, and I was kind of like, I think it's tough, but I mean, and then also they say a thing too, like, this has been kind of a pet peeve of mine. I finally kind of just started doing it myself. Like, all these singing motherfuckers calling them rappers.
Right.
Like, when did, you know, they their music is very hip hop influenced, and some of them rap, sing or whatever, but it's like, come on, man, like, call it what it is. You know what I mean? So it's like, to me, like, when people sing, they're not rapping.
We talked about that before. Yeah. I just think it should be different categories.
Yeah, different categories.
Because I'm going to put people like Jadakiss, Fabolous, people that still been probably 20 plus in the game and can still out-rap any rapper that's out here right now. They're in a whole different bracket.
Yeah.
Right. But you throw somebody else maybe in this era on that now, they're like, they ain't going to want to hear that shit in their car.
No.
So it just depends on where at least on the West Coast, because they still getting love in New York for sure.
Yeah. No, for sure. I mean, I love old music. I listen to a lot of old music, old soul, old all kind of shit, you know, old Jamaican music, whatever, but old salsa and shit. And I listen to old rap, but also I love when newer rap artists, like them Nas projects, man, like get with a producer like Hit-Boy, make some shit just more relevant for now. You know what I mean?
See,
like,
but Nas, King's Death, his albums was good. If you appreciate Nas as an MC, right. I think he just has his core fan base. But he's never actually always been good to me in choosing certain beats. Like, if Nas chose better beats, a lot of his shit would be way more impactful. Even though he still has classic albums, like, even I'm low key controversy thinking even with Stillmatic and Illmatic, because they say that's his best, but Stillmatic was that was something else too.
Stillmatic was different. I'm with you on that too. Like, I want to see the pioneers clash with the new sound.
Yeah.
Merge it together, get these new beats that's hip now.
Yeah.
And go in there and create some classics. Stop picking them beats from way back when. We heard that shit already.
Like you said,
get with these new producers. That'd be dope, actually.
Yeah, no, I love to see kind of like, and it's, I think it's like, it can't be with everybody. You know what I mean? It's like, it has to be with the artist to make sense. You know what I mean? But yeah, I love to see collaborations from old school artists and young artists and working with young producers like that. You know, just bringing that energy. You know?
We be on the rappers a lot, but these DJs also got to get back to and learn how the DJs was doing back in the day. Because when you had K Slay, you had Clue, all them different tapes, you know what I mean? They just want to do albums now, but when you had that street raw music on them DJ tapes, it was a different ball game.
Look,
I do agree. I think we've lost a lot with the DJ culture not being what it was, what it is now, you know?
Rest in peace, Justo, man. I missed the mixtape awards, man. The mixtape era, that was different. That was golden for me. But before we go, I seen you had some issues with Vlad. A lot of people like to call him a culture vulture or whatever the case. What's your issues with Vlad? Because usually it comes from people on this side of the track. So to see another fellow white man having an issue with Vlad, I was kind of shocked. Like, damn, he got a problem with Vlad? What's going on with that?
I mean, just the negativity of a lot of the content and topics that he chooses to focus on. I mean, it's like a hip-hop, you know, head. I love, like, the interviews. Some of the interviews that he has are, like, classic or whatever, right? You know, but when he has a lot of younger artists on or newer artists and he's, like, just, like, asking really police-type questions and, like, you know, getting people in compromising situations, encouraging people to basically self-snitch or whatever, I think that's foul. You know what I mean? And I just think he has this big platform and he's so obsessed with just getting clicks that he kind of like, instead of doing things that may be a little more positive, he's just really focused on what's going to get the views. It's a business, I get it, but you know, you already made your money. Why are you so worried now about it? You know what I mean too? And just that whole kind of like, you know, like an artist can be not really that big, but if they do some crazy, you know, shit and they get a gun, you know, get a murder charge or something like that, then he gonna have them on, or you know what I mean?
It's like he's so happy to document these kids or these people, and then when they die or they go to jail, he's so happy, like, hey, I had an interview with them, like, I did this, I did that. So you see
they post the interview right after the guy got killed or whatever.
What would you say to the people who would say you're contradicting yourself? Because on one hand, you say the new artist, you know, they should do whatever to build the following, to get the clicks, because the engagement gets them put on.
I didn't say do whatever.
No. I'm just saying. You basically were saying, getting a following before the actual music, because the plight with the real artist is, hey, you're putting all this shit before the art, and this is the reason the music is garbage, and this is the reason the kids are following these fucking idiots telling them to pop perps and sip lean.
Sure, sure.
But on one hand, Vlad, if he puts out interviews of them just talking positive shit and uplift, nobody's gonna watch. So yeah, he's gonna talk to them about, hey man, how about how many bodies you got? So any kind of a contradiction? Because he's doing the same thing.
I think doing things that go viral that are maybe slightly like questionable or whatever is kind of one thing, but celebrating the death of young people on your music regularly, it's just a bit extreme, man. It's just like so much, there's just so much, like, for me personally, like I'm kind of getting over like listening to murder music. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of hard to find joy in a song when somebody's just like celebrating how they just killed some young man, or talking about, you know what I mean, all this stuff. So just getting a little morbid, you know, it's just a little too extreme, I think, some of the violent stuff, you know what I mean? And the people, these are real life consequences we're talking about. People do these interviews and then people die because of the interviews, you know what I mean? Like, people go to jail because of the interviews or whatever and stuff like that. So I wouldn't discourage people from trying to get attention and do things that make them virality, but not at the cost of your freedom, you know what I mean? Not at the cost of like somebody, you know, like losing their life or something violent happening or whatever. You know what I mean? Or whatever.
Yeah, because that's what we getting at. Like, females, the only thing they can rap about is being a whore, because that gets the most streams. But then now you have in real time all the women in the community becoming whores because their heroes are whores. So at the same time, from a business aspect, oh yeah, we making money. We getting, so this is where the plight comes in, that from the people from these communities giving pushback on them, saying, man, fuck them streams, man. We want to see something different. Like, you tired of hearing murder music. We tired of hearing drug music. We tired of hearing 304 music. Let's bring the artistry back. You can still make money if this becomes popular. You know what I'm saying? I think that needs to be the shift towards that, to making this popular, to where this gets the stream, this gets the money.
I agree with you philosophically. I don't know if it's going to happen. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's like, I just think that, like, wow, like with the female thing, like, I do feel you, it's a little outrageous right now. You know how out of control the sexuality is on some of these things. You know what I mean? And like, but at the same time, though, I'm not into censorship. I'm not into telling people what they can talk about. You know, I don't believe in that. You know, the sexual stuff, you know, yeah. But, you know, we've always had pornography. We have all these things. I mean, the pornography is so easy for young kids to find right now, you know. But, you know, I see the influence of whatever, but it's the violent shit that really, really fucks with me, man. Because it's like, you see this culture of, like, going on right now where if I talk about other dead young men in my city and taunt them, then I can go viral. Big. And you know, and that's just a really scary trend that I'd like to see end.
Like I always say, man, let's raise the bar. Let's raise the bar. Let's raise the frequency. And as far as porn go, that's a whole nother topic. We should ban porn. Yeah. We'll get into another episode because that's a whole nother animal. But any final words, my man? We run out of time here. Thank you for coming. Blessing the platform.
Of course.
With your well of knowledge, you feel me? I wish we had another hour to pick your brain.
Come back.
For sure.
Yeah.
Let the people know where they can find you, the up-and-coming artists.
Yeah.
Run that down for them.
Hit me on Instagram, Paul_DJP_Stewart, Stewart. And yeah, closing words, man, I'd just like to thank you for the opportunity to come up here and meet you guys and speak with you guys. And yeah, man, like, let's keep it going. Anything I can do, I love spreading knowledge about the industry and everything like that. I'm always looking for talent, you know, artists hit me up or whatever. And yeah, I love to you know, I've been doing this for a long ass motherfucking time, and I love to spread my knowledge and information to other people. No, ain't doing me no good just keeping it in here. You know what I mean? So I appreciate the opportunity for the platform to speak and wish you guys the best on everything.
And good looking, man.
Thank you. That's love. Yeah, we appreciate you being on here. Like you said, this was a good one.
Yeah, definitely.
Part two coming soon, man. Share, like, subscribe to the channel. Go follow my boy. Y'all tap in, man. The viral way. We out of here. Bang.
Ain't no handouts. I did it from the ground up. In the streets, thugging hard is where they found us. Got a problem, nigga. Watch my troopers mount up. My bitches bang too. And you a lame, though. You niggas ain't outside. Yeah, we came through. You want your lights up? We put you on the shack.